Welcome to The Credit Connection with High Tech Lending's David Brown.
Welcome to our show, The Credit Connection. I'm your host, David Brown, with High Tech Lending and American Senior Reverse Mortgage. At The Credit Connection, we want you to connect to the credit you want and deserve for your home, business, and personal use. Here we discuss all things creditworthy, such as lenders, FICO scores, interest rates, credit cards, mortgages. You name it, if it has to do with credit or money, we'll discuss all the aspects. We really enjoy your feedback and questions that relate to credit. I encourage you to ask your questions through our website, reloans.com. Hit the Contact Us tab and leave your question or comment. You can also call us at 805-686-2321. Today's program, we're going to share some actual lending and credit scenarios and pull back the curtain regarding bankruptcy filing with bankruptcy attorney Sandra Macbeth. Here's some current credit scenarios affecting the credit markets and customers today. Remember Stated Loans and other subprime lenders? They went away with a financial overhaul with Dodd-Frank bill. Well, let me officially tell you, like Jack Nicholson, I'm back. These loans were commonly known as liar loans. They were officially subprime or all-to-A loans. Today, they are calling themselves a non-QM, or non-qualifying mortgages, as they don't meet the Dodd-Frank guidelines for a qualifying mortgage. Some of the reasons to use this product type might include self-employed with under 2 years of tax returns, non-warrantable condos or condo hotels, credit events, say for example, a bankruptcy, which we'll discuss today, that hasn't seasoned for a qualified mortgage. Having seasoned funds might be another for your down payment. It might come from a business or something that is unacceptable to a qualified mortgage. Higher debt-to-income ratios, and even foreign nationals. If you don't have a visa status or citizenship status, you can still get a loan through these programs. The bad news for this is that they are priced higher than qualifying mortgage loans by 1-2% in rate and 1-3 points in price. But they are available. I've had more demand for these non-qualifying loans. They're back. Again, they're a little bit pricey, but if that's what you need, it can still work and put you in that home. Okay, show me the money or the credit, as the case goes for this show. Let's get to the heart of today's program and pull back the curtain on bankruptcy and our special guest attorney, Sandra Macbeth. Sandra is a local girl. She graduated from Cal Poly San Luis Obispo with a Bachelor of Arts degree and went on to receive her JD from the University of San Diego. After being admitted to the California Bar, Sandra became a Chapter 7 panel trustee and a U.S. Bankruptcy Court-appointed examiner. She served on the board of the San Luis Obispo County Bar Association, a member of the American Bankruptcy Institute, a National Association of Bankruptcy Trustees. Previously, Sandra was a member of the Personal and Small Business Law Advisory Commission, State Bar of California, for 5 years and served as chairperson for 1 year. She also is a former member of the San Luis Obispo County Women's Lawyers Association and the Quota International of San Luis Obispo, where she still was an officer and board member. Sandra is also a published author, Personal and Small Business Bankruptcy in California, served as a volunteer for the TRO Clinic in San Luis Obispo, and a speaker of current bankruptcy issues for WLA of San Luis Obispo, the Central Coast Escrow Association, and the Central Coast Organization for Enrolled Agents. Welcome, Sandra, after all that lineage. We're glad to have you here today.
Thank you, David. I'm happy to be here.
Tell us, Sandra, how did you get into the niche of bankruptcy representation?
Well, I basically got into it when I was at Cal Poly. I interned for a local law firm, a local attorney who was a bankruptcy attorney and bankruptcy trustee. And I was very fortunate when I finished law school, he wanted to hire me. So I went to work with Farmer and Ready in San Luis Obispo, and David Farmer was a trustee. And so I just began working with his practice and eventually became a trustee, but have continued to do bankruptcy. I'm in my 30th year now.
Do you specialize in any specific type of bankruptcy law?
most of my practice involves Chapter 7 bankruptcies, which are liquidation cases. I have practiced in the Chapter 13 realm. I have filed Chapter 13s, represent creditors in Chapter 13s, as well as Chapter 11s. Touched a few Chapter 12 cases, which are family farmer cases, but most of my practice now is in Chapter 7, or if it's in the other chapters, I represent creditors.
I'll ask you about those different chapters here in a second, but on average, how many cases a year do you file on behalf of others?
Well, in the last few years, the filings have gone way down, which is a good thing. You know, the
because
economy.
Of a better economy and,
yeah, okay. The economy is recovering, you know, from the recession. So probably in the last few years, we're looking at, you know, 30 to 40 cases. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, much, much more. In 2005, the bankruptcy laws changed. So there was a flurry of filings right before the law changed so people could qualify. And then with the recession in 2007 through 2014-15, basically, is what we saw as the recession, the filings were probably triple that.
And what trends are you finding now for in the past 3 years? Is it just a decrease in filings, or is there a trend out there for different types of businesses or different types of different clientele?
Not really a different clientele. There are a lot fewer cases, but we still have the typical case that I see, especially in the Santa Maria area or the San Luis Obispo area, is a product of divorce, medical bills, a loss of employment, or medical mm-hmm. issues. We don't see a lot of abuse up in this area. Oftentimes, it's a small business that just cannot survive. And they have to close their doors. And if it's a small business solely owned, then we look at filing Chapter 7 to eliminate all the resulting debt.
Okay. And how does bankruptcy compare versus consumer credit counseling? Both of these have an effect on your credit, but different outcomes. Can you explain that a little to us?
Since the 2005 enactment of the new bankruptcy laws, they require everybody going through bankruptcy to go through consumer credit counseling, which is an opportunity to see if there is a way to pay some or all of the debt back over time versus just eliminating it through a bankruptcy. Most of the time, and most of the clients I see for Chapter 7 don't have the income or the reliable income that would allow them to enter into such a plan. So they do have to look to bankruptcy to simply eliminate the debt and discharge the debt. But I think, you know, the repayment outside of a bankruptcy is certainly going to allow you to come out the other side a little bit sooner in terms of credit and approval for loans in the future. But most people I see, that isn't a realistic possibility just because there isn't sufficient what we call disposable monthly income to make such a payment.
Okay. So it becomes a liquidation and dissolving those debts rather than trying to have a payment plan.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And at Chapter 13, which I know we'll get into in a bit, is a repayment plan where you do pay a portion of your debt back. Most people I see are Chapter 7 candidates simply because once they pay rent, food, utilities, a car payment, basic insurance expenses, there just isn't money left over to make a dent in the unsecured debt, whether it be medical bills, credit cards, that type of debt.
Can a person file a bankruptcy without an attorney?
They can. There are what we call petition preparers. They are limited in what they can accept for payment. And really, all they can do is type up the forms. They can't give legal advice. They can't and don't attend a hearing that's required in every bankruptcy case, mm-hmm. but they can do the basic document preparation, which is you'll see companies in this area that advertise as document preparers, and they'll handle divorce, bankruptcy, they'll draft wills for you, that kind of mm-hmm. thing, but they cannot give you legal advice, which at times can be a bit difficult in a bankruptcy process because you really need someone providing legal advice
well,
to
yeah,
you.
I see these advertisements for do-it-yourself law and things of that nature that advertise all the time. And I don't know if that includes bankruptcy, but they highlight do-it-yourself divorce, do-it-yourself business filings, things of that nature. And I don't know if bankruptcy attorney was one of them.
They do, and that's what we call a petition preparer.
who are the parties in a bankruptcy proceeding?
In a bankruptcy case, you have the debtor, which is the person that files the bankruptcy. Okay. You have the creditors, which are everyone they owe money to.
Okay.
You have a trustee who is assigned to every case to review it and administer it. And we can get into the details of that. So it's basically kind of a three-corner party platform. And then the judge, which most people in bankruptcy rarely see the judge.
It's all done with the trustee.
It's done with the trustee. The trustee examines you. The trustee verifies your information. It'll go to the judge if there are some more complicated issues, if someone's objecting to the discharge in a bankruptcy, if someone is needing to get relief from that bankruptcy to, say, foreclose or evict someone, then you'll see the judge. But for the most part, the trustee sees every case. The judge does not.
Okay. Well, that probably streamlines it, too.
It does.
Okay.
It definitely does.
Okay. And can they, so you were saying if the creditor, they can force can the creditors force a person into bankruptcy rather than a voluntary bankruptcy?
Yes, they can. There is an involuntary bankruptcy filing, and that happens when you have to pull a minimum, I believe it is three creditors together mm-hmm. that have a certain amount of debt, and they can file what's called an involuntary petition, which acts sort of as a summons and complaint. Then you get an opportunity to respond before the court confirms that you are in bankruptcy. It's a fairly, I don't know if it's complicated, but it's a more difficult procedure than a lot of creditors are willing to undertake. Usually there's a large amount at stake mm-hmm. before a creditor will push someone into an involuntary.
Okay. And what are the typical fees and costs for filing, and are they paid up front or by whom? Just interested to, if somebody's getting to that point to say I should be filing, what's going to cost them, and what tell me how I get started with that.
Well, the fees vary certainly from attorney to attorney. The filing fees are a few hundred dollars, you know, with the court, but each chapter will cost a different amount. Chapter mm-hmm. 7 is probably the cheapest. That's what most people file. And, you know, I see fees ranging probably between, you know, $1,000 to $5,000 for a Chapter 7, depending on the complexity. For a Chapter 13, they have what we call minimum and maximum fees that can be charged, because Chapter 13s last a lot longer. And I believe in the Central District, for individuals not in business, the fees, just a straight across the board fee that is allowed is, I believe it's up to $4,500, if not $5,000 for a non-business case. But those cases take a lot longer. And Chapter 11s are very expensive mm-hmm. because of what is involved in those. And those range, I know there's some local attorneys that'll do them for as low as $10,000, but in a bigger case and a firm that handles those types of cases a lot, you know, in the Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo County areas, you're probably looking at tens of thousands of dollars to file Chapter 11.
Okay. So the 13 has some guidelines within the judges or statute that it should fit within this particular range. Is that what I understood?
For the fees?
For this 13. I understand the 10. Excuse me. If I file Chapter 11, it's pretty much unlimited depending upon the complexity and the work involved, and on the seven, a Chapter 7, it's kind of a range based upon geographic and the amount of time a attorney will spend. But did I understand that in a Chapter 13, there's a basic range that the court will put on?
There's a flat rate that the court will approve without any further hearing or application. If you go over that, you have to apply to the court for approval of additional fees. But it's that basic rate that most attorneys will file the case. And in a Chapter 13, you don't always get paid up front. You can get paid through the repayment plan. Chapter 7, you have to be paid in full before the case can be filed. Otherwise you'd be a creditor, and that's not
okay.
Or that is frowned upon.
You have a conflict of interest, would
yes.
you not?
Yes, yeah. You do, and you'd not be able to collect once they file the bankruptcy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Well, what's the downside of filing a bankruptcy?
Well, I mean, there's certainly the harm to your credit. Right. If you're looking to build credit or, you know, buy a home or buy a car within the next year or two or months, it will not allow you to do that. So there is that downside. There is always the stigma. There's always been a stigma with bankruptcy. Although I, having been in this industry for a while, I don't see it as often as mm-hmm. we used to. And I know people come in and they have learned that the stigma is not quite as bad as it used to be. But it's primarily the harm to your credit. Okay. You know, if you already own a home, it's probably going to be fine because you aren't going to need to qualify for a mortgage anytime soon. The car loans, you know, they'll give it fairly quickly after you file, depending on your income situation. But that's really the downside. The downside is the cost, the time, and then the effects on your credit.
Okay. The benefits for filing a BK would be what?
Well, the whole purpose of a bankruptcy is to give you a fresh start. Mm-hmm. And so the benefits are large in that manner. They do allow you to wipe out debt that you clearly can't afford to pay and to start over. Mm-hmm. And you can begin to rebuild your credit, start to just move on with your life and protect your family in terms of a roof over their heads and food on the table.
Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Sandra McBeth on bankruptcies.
Mom, are you okay?
Honey, I'm fine. Just a broken glass.
Really? Are you okay?
I haven't been sleeping well since Dad, you know. I wake up at night worried if I can make ends meet.
Mom, why don't we look into a reverse mortgage? Then you won't have to make any more house payments and you can live comfortably.
Should I just call the guys on TV?
No, who knows where they're from? My neighbor recommended David Brown of American Senior. He'll come to the house and answer all our questions. Mom, call David at American Senior, okay? Here, I Googled the number, 686-2321.
686-2321.
All homeowners over 62, don't worry about your finances. Call 686-2321. 686-2321. Get a reverse mortgage with David Brown of American Senior. David Brown of American Senior, a division of High Tech Lending, licensed by the Department of Oversight under California Law Mortgage and Lending Act, NMLS 7147, CA3413-0937.
Hey, welcome back to the second part of our show, The Credit Connection. If you're just now joining us, we were discussing bankruptcies with Sandra McBeth. Sandra, we went over a number of things here so far. What are the different types of bankruptcies and how would you use them? You hear a 7, 11, 13, others. Give us a quick rundown.
Okay, Chapter 7 is what most people file. And what you're doing in a Chapter 7 is you're eliminating your unsecured debt, such as credit card, medical bills, personal loans, lines of credit, that type of thing. Chapter 7 is also a liquidation. So if you own assets that we're unable to protect, and you are allowed to protect and exempt your basic household goods, so much in your home, cars, you know, the basic things to give you that fresh start. But if you did own something that we couldn't protect, the trustee who's assigned to your case takes that property, sells it, and uses that money to pay your creditors.
Give me an example of that asset.
Oftentimes it's real estate. If you own a piece of real estate that you're not living in, so you can't claim a homestead and it has some equity, a trustee will sell it, just like you would sell it. You hire a broker, goes through the normal process.
But they won't make you sell grandma's antique ring or something that you inherited?
They might. It depends on the value. There are exemptions to protect from that, but those exemptions are somewhat limited. Okay. You can claim a homestead exemption if you're living in the home, and that ranges from $75,000 to $175,000 in equity.
Okay.
Jewelry, you know, you're probably in the $5,000 or $6,000 range, depending on which exemption you're claiming. But for the most part, probably 99% of the Chapter 7s are what we call no asset cases, meaning people don't own anything with substantial equity. So that's a Chapter 7.
Okay. The 11?
Chapter 11 is a large reorganization. That's what you hear, Toys R Us
Texaco,
filing,
right.
Texaco. The big companies file that. It's used locally if there is a a business and a corporation who may not be huge, but it does have the ability, it thinks it has the ability to restructure the debt. So it allows a company and a business to restructure their debt, restructure their operations, and come up with a plan to repay their creditors at least as much as they would get if they were liquidated.
Okay.
That's what the standard have to meet.
Okay.
Yeah. And we file Chapter 11s for individuals. Usually it's in a related case. So if a corporation that this person owns and has personally guaranteed everything files Chapter 11, we can put the individual into Chapter 11 and protect them while they're trying to restructure.
Okay. And a 13 would be, different?
A Chapter 13 is a repayment plan. It's called a wage earner plan, but only individuals, people can file a Chapter 13, not a business. And they also have debt limits. So you can only have so much unsecured and so much secured debt in a Chapter 13 because it really is designed for wage earners that show some disposable income left every month that they can repay some of that debt. And that's used if, let's say, they did have an asset that had equity they couldn't protect and they wanted to retain that asset. They're going to have to make payments through a plan.
Okay. When should a person engage you for the bankruptcy process? How far in advance, or is there planning to do prior to filing?
There is planning. There's a pretty fine line between planning and fraud when it comes to exemption planning or asset planning, because you can't go out and dispose of your assets and then turn around and file bankruptcy. Usually people come to see me when they're starting to get the calls from creditors.
Okay.
Oftentimes, you know, it's a last minute thing where their wages are on the verge of being garnished or they have a foreclosure sale set. Those are quicker ones, but we prefer it if you come see us a little bit sooner so that we can get everything done and get it filed before you lose some wages or before the house is foreclosed on or before you are having to answer a lawsuit.
Right.
For collection.
Okay. And what types of debts are not extinguished or dismissed with bankruptcy?
In a Chapter 7, generally student loans are not dischargeable unless you can prove an undue hardship. And there's several elements to proving that. And it's pretty tough to prove. I mean, you basically can't be able to work. Your income barely pays the rent kind of thing. And you have to establish several items to discharge a student loan. So for all intents and purposes, student loans are not very dischargeable. Income taxes can be dischargeable, but they have to satisfy several elements too. The first of which is they have to be at least 3 years old and you have to have filed a return for them as opposed to, say, the IRS filing a return for you. So the tax, and I handle a lot of tax cases. Those seem to be fairly prevalent, regardless of whether we're in a recession or not. And it's a fairly complicated analysis, but with the right records, you know, we've discharged a lot of tax debt over the years.
Yeah.
It is possible.
All right. What's the BK process? How long does it take to go through this?
When we're talking about a Chapter 7, the basic process from the time we file the petition to the time you get a discharge is about 4 months.
4 months
is
typical?
Is typical of when your case is active with the court. It doesn't take very long.
And pretty standard.
It is, as long as there's no objections or other issues out there that could complicate it.
Complications like going through a divorce at the same time or what?
No, complications can arise because when you file a case, what you're trying to do is discharge all of those debts. And each of those creditors has the right to object to the discharge of their debt.
Okay.
If they can show things like fraud, a false financial statement, an intentional injury to something or someone. Mm-hmm. If a creditor files a complaint like that, or if you're not cooperating with your trustee and a creditor feels that you have not disclosed all of your assets, they can object to your overall discharge. So those kinds of lawsuits can delay it quite a bit.
Okay, good. If you didn't list a creditor, could you make special plans with a creditor? Or do they have to just be listed and included? Or
all creditors have to be listed. Okay. Whether they're dischargeable, whether they're secured or unsecured. So you have to make every effort to provide all of your creditors and that they're listed and they get notice. Okay. We pull credit reports with people so we can verify that with all their paperwork. So you can't intentionally leave someone off.
Okay.
If you accidentally leave someone off and they don't get notice, but your case is a no asset case, meaning okay. there's nothing to make a claim to, it is still discharged.
Okay.
But if you leave someone off and their claim is based on some sort of fraud activity,
mm-hmm.
it will not be discharged and they can go ahead and litigate that.
Or it could even be reopened if it were discharged after the fact. For how
it
long?
Could be reopened if the courts don't generally let you reopen just to add a creditor, especially uh-huh. in a no asset case. But if it is a dispute as to whether or not they got notice, then yes, you can reopen it to list them and make sure they've been given notice.
That's it for today. I'm sorry we're out of time. We'd like to have Sandra back again if she'll enjoy coming back and ask more questions. I hope you found today's presentation informational and valuable. If so, please share this with other family and friends. If not, tell no one. Thank you, Sandra, for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
How can our people reach you?
Folks can reach me. They can go to my website, which is www.macbethlegal.com. I can be reached by phone at 805-922-7914 or via email smacbeth@macbethlegal.com.
Awesome. Thanks so much for being here. Sure appreciate it. If you have questions or comments about our show and want to participate with questions of your own, go to our website at reloans.com and click the Contact Us tab. Leave your comments and questions, and we'll get to them on next week's show. I'm your host, David Brown, with High Tech Lending and American Senior Reverse Mortgage. Thank you for tuning in to The Credit Connection, where we do the work and you get the credit. This is David Brown wishing you profit and credit worthiness. See you next week with another interesting credit concept topic.
You've been listening to The Credit Connection with David Brown from High Tech Lending. For more information, contact David Brown directly at 805-686-2321. That's 805-686-2321. Or by email at dbrown@hightechlending.com. dbrown@hightechlending.com. And visit David online at reloans.com. That's reloans.com. And tune in next time for High Tech Lending's David Brown and The Credit Connection here on KSMA.